Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Coming up on the show today, the winningest woman in tournament poker history, Kathy Liebert, will join us on the show. And more websites get cracked down on by the government as the online poker shutdown continues in a new phase this week. Hello, I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the featured table in Harrah's Poker Room in St. Louis, where the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $247,000 and the cash games and tournament games are surrounding me in the room on this Tuesday afternoon. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is actually right in the middle of a tournament at the Red Rock Casino in Las Vegas. So let's go right there and say hello. Dennis, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Paul. Having some fun at the Red Rock.
Now, what is this tournament that you're playing in? Some sort of million-dollar deal?
Yeah. What it is, the Stations has got about 11 different casinos out here in the Vegas area. The four biggest ones, what they did was have a tournament there. The top 25 from each of those four then advanced to the championship round, which is what we're in here. So this particular, there was $200,000 for each of the first four in the prize pool at guarantee. They went over that, of course, in a couple of them. And then there's $200,000 left here for us to play with. So we're playing for $60,000 for first and a couple of Rolex watches.
Wow. Well, very, very nice. And you've gone through a couple of levels, and how is your chip stack?
Well, I just found out that an ace, king of spades doesn't beat anything.
You didn't get knocked out with ace, king, did you?
No.
Oh.
We started with 25,000 and lost 4,500 on that end before I folded it. But, a guy limped in. I raised. He re-raised. Three bet me. Heavy. I called. Flop came in nine high, and the guy shoved. So, I just folded it. No big deal. I could have gone broke with it, but I decided Paul told me one time not to do that.
Well, you know what? That prop bet that we put in, it sticks in the back of your mind, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the bet we have is calling off your stack with ace-king and getting knocked out of a tournament. There's a little bounty that we each put on each other, and neither of us has done it in the last year and a half. Besides the one that you're playing at the Red Rock, you also were in Reno this weekend for Jennifer Harmon's charity event for the Nevada SPCA. How was that?
It was excellent, actually. I think there was close to 600 people in the charity. We raised over $100,000. I had some fun. I never went bust. What I did for the first two levels is I let the rest of the table tell me what to do. They would tell me to raise, to shove, to fold, whatever. And I did exactly what they did without ever looking at my cards.
Really?
And I never busted. I not only never busted, I actually quadrupled up. I found out that an 8-3 does really, really well blind. I cut the pair with an 8-3 against pocket 10s.
Very
well
nice.
Played, right?
Very
yeah,
well
so
played.
That's right, after I knocked him out. I bought him back in after I knocked him out, so what the heck.
That's nice. That's nice. So who were some of the people who were there? I know Kathy Liebert, who we have coming up here, was there, and she had tweeted that she flew over to Reno from Vegas with Antonio Esfandiari on his private jet. Who else did you see there?
Oh, there were a ton of people there. Daniel was there. Ming the Master was there. Jamie Gold was there. There's just a whole slug of them. Jerry Yang was there. I think Jerry actually made the final table of the celebrity thing. I went out about 50th. Got some points for our team, but that's about it. Bragging rights on that. But it was a real good charity, a lot of people there, lots of rebuys, enjoyable time. So Andy Block was another one. I don't know, it's just a whole slug of them.
And then on Sunday you went and played the next day at another event there at the Peppermill in Reno. What was that?
Correct. They had the Heartland Poker Tour, had one of their circuit events there. They called it the Nevada State Championship. It's a $1,600 buy-in. They had 200 and some people there. It was a good, solid tournament. We had some fun. I did not do well there. I sat down at the table. Kathy was immediately to my left, and Ming the Master was two to her left. We had a bit of a tough table. But I have one hand I'll describe real quick, and then I'm going to have to get back to playing here.
Yep.
But I was Kathy was the button, so I had to act right before her. I looked at a suited king ten, went ahead and raised it. Blinds were only 1 and 2. I made it 500. She folded. The gentleman between her and Ming folded, and Ming called. So we've got 1,100 in the pot now. Flop comes out 10 of diamonds, 6 of hearts, and 5 of clubs. So I have top pair with a king kicker. All right. Ming checks. I bet 700. He makes it 2,000, which is quite interesting, but he's a big blind. He could have had a whole variety of different things.
Yep.
And also, I could have been doing a continuation bet. So I went ahead and called the 2,000. So now there's 5,000 out there in the pot. Turn card is a 3 of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
So again, not doing too bad. Now he checks. Do you have any clue what kind of a hand? I know what hand I put him on, which I was somewhat right, somewhat wrong.
So the board now is 10-6-5-3.
Correct.
Well, I'm sure hoping he doesn't have 7-4 and flop the open ender and pinned it on the turn.
But that's exactly one of the possibilities. I put him that he either paired it somewhere there or that he had a very good draw, a straight draw. He had a 7-8. He had a, like you said, and hit it with the 3 maybe, something that way. He checks. All right, the way he's been staying and everything, I don't see him checking there if he hits it straight. So I'm actually feeling fairly good. I thought he might have a pair or something. But I played it a little tight, and I went ahead and checked. Now, at this time, I should have told you ahead of time. I've got 26,000, 27,000. Ming had started out the hand with a little over 10.
Okay.
All right. Turn card put the 9 of diamonds out there.
Mm-hmm.
He has 8,200 left. He bets 5,000. No, not the 9 of diamonds. Sorry, king of diamonds. So now
king of diamonds.
I have top two.
You got top two, yeah.
Yeah. He bets 5,000 out of an 8,200 that is all he has left. If he had the 7-8, he just hit it. I can't put him on any other hand there that would beat me. So I cry called. He turned over the 10 deuce of diamonds.
Player, sorry for the delay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know. And it really wasn't that bad played by him or anything. I mean, he did hit top pair on the flop. He check-raised me. If I didn't have a 10 or something like that, he could have taken the pot down. I mean, you know, and then it came runner-runner diamonds. He makes an over-bet almost. He bet the pot size. There was about 5,000 a pot. He bet 5 on the river out of his 8,200. I mean, he's been playing very aggressive. You know, it was an interesting hand, I just thought.
Yeah,
and I'm still trying
to
figure some way I could have laid that down.
No, I don't think there's any way, especially once you hit top two. I mean, even if you put him on a flopped 6-5 for two pair, now you got top two, you got to figure you're good. Unless he's gone runner-runner there, you got to think yourself pretty good there.
Well, I went in the tank. It probably took me 3 minutes to call, but eventually I did, and I just don't see any way I could have got away from that. I wish I could have, but anyhow.
Yeah. All right, before you go, I do have to ask you about something a little bit controversial, and that is from Jen Harmon's event on Saturday at the Peppermill out there in Reno. Jen, of course, is a Full Tilt pro, and I heard that there was a Full Tilt representative there handing out Full Tilt patches to some of the players. Is that true, and what do you think of that if it is?
Yes, it's true, and I do not agree with it. Not for sure. They have prohibited U.S. players from playing on their site. Stars has done the same. Stars has asked that no marketing be done within the continental U.S., and that's what we're doing. So no patches, no anything. The fact that they had a representative up there actually physically handing out patches and trying to get them to place on people, I don't understand, and I think it's in bad taste, and I think it's kind of waving a red flag at the DOJ, and I don't think we need that right now.
I think it's also sending a bad message to players who might be Full Tilt players and have money stuck on that site and can't get it off.
Yep, good point.
All right, I just wanted to confirm that and see what you thought about it. Now I'm going to let you go because I heard them calling the start of the next round there. So good luck in the tournament and keep me posted, and I'll catch up with you next week.
All right, sounds good.
All right, there's
take care.
There's Dennis Phillips playing in the championship event at the Red Rock Casino out in Las Vegas this afternoon here on the final table. Kathy Liebert is coming up to join me in about 10 minutes or so. Let me go to some other news. Speaking of the online crackdown, Full Tilt has still not announced when players will be able to get any of their money off of that site. There are stories that are going around, some of them confirmed, some of them unconfirmed. A lot of them having to do with whether Full Tilt can, in fact, pay anybody at this point. We'll get into that with Kathy because I know she has some things to say about it. But the newest development in the online poker shutdown happened yesterday when the U.S. Attorney of Maryland handed out more indictments. Now, remember that the first ones that came down, the 11 people who were indicted by the Southern District of New York, that's a completely different department of the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Department of Justice. This is the U.S. Attorney of Maryland who handed down these indictments yesterday. 11 bank accounts and 10 domains seized. 3 people indicted, charged with money laundering and running illegal gambling businesses. The only website here that you're likely to have heard of is Doyle's Room, which we told you last week Doyle Brunson has withdrawn his name from. They still have the right to use his name and his image, but he severed his ties with that website 10 days or so ago. Whether he saw this coming or not, I don't know. But Doyle's Room is one that has had its domain seized by the U.S. Attorney's Office of Maryland. And, you know, that means anybody who's got their money on there is going to have to worry about getting it off. There were also some other sports betting sites, bookmaking sites that were online that were also seized by the government. This seems to have been an undercover job done by a group in Baltimore, Maryland, that essentially set up a bogus payment processing business called Linwood Payment Solutions. And they made contact with some of the people who ran some of these online gambling sites, negotiated contracts with them, and set themselves up as the processor of payments. But they were the government, and they were trapping these people all the way in a classic undercover sting operation. This has been going on since November 12th of 2009. So that's another crackdown. And at this point, when you hear about this one being kind of round two of the online poker crackdown, you got to ask yourself, if you're an online player and you have money on other sites that have not been shut down by the government yet, whether it would be a good time to take it off of there. I would not be trusting my money to any site now that could have all of its assets and its domain seized by the U.S. government through one office or another. That's a decision you've got to make. Now, also on that same front, a guy by the name of Bradley Franzen, who was one of the 11 people indicted in the Black Friday indictments that were handed down on April 15th, this guy owns a payment processing company. He has pleaded guilty. He told a judge yesterday that he lied to banks and created fake companies and websites to hide the payments. He's one of the people who's been charged with bank fraud and money laundering, 9 charges in all. He pleaded guilty to 3 of them yesterday, facing up to 30 years in prison. But what's going to happen here is that the government is going to get him to testify against some of these other online operators. He can get a shorter sentence if he cooperates with them, if he turns state evidence and hands over some of the money that he earned while he was doing payment processing for some of these online poker companies. So this thing continues to roll on and on and on. And if you think it's going to be done in time for you to get your money out of some of these sites to play in the World Series of Poker, well, that starts a week from today, and I think your chances are awfully slim. You're hitting to less than a one-outer here if you think you're going to get your money off of some of the sites that have not yet released their funds. To our knowledge, PokerStars is the only one that has paid out its players to the tune of 9 figures, somewhere over $100 million they had paid out in the first month after Black Friday. Last Thursday, the Nevada Assembly passed an internet gambling bill that would develop a licensing process for online poker businesses in that state. We've talked to you before about intrastate online poker. None of it can happen, of course, until the federal government gets through some legislation that legalizes online gambling. There was a fly-in in Washington, D.C. today, put together by the Poker Players Alliance. Greg Raymer and Linda Johnson and Jan Fisher and others were there. They're all trying to lobby as best they can, but as of right now, nothing moving forward. There's a congressman in Texas named Joe Barton who was part of the fly-in today on Capitol Hill. He's been working on a bill to move through Congress, but this is a very, very slow process. And as I said on last week's show, unless something happens in the next 6 to 8 months, once we enter an election year last year, all of these politicians are going to have things that they consider much more important than passing bills to license and regulate online poker. So if that happens, you're looking probably at 2013 before anything goes down. There have been editorials in the Los Angeles Times and the Washington Post and the Huffington Post and in Time Magazine and other print outlets on why online poker should be legal and licensed and regulated, and we certainly have been advocating for it here on this show for more than the 2.5 years that we have been doing this show. But thus far, it has only gone down, not up. And whether things will change anytime soon, as I said, things seem slim. So let's see what else is in the news today. As I mentioned, the World Series of Poker starts 1 week from today. They will not only be doing live streaming of every bracelet event on WSOP.com, but also their ESPN deal will include lots of coverage. And Kara Scott, who you know from High Stakes Poker and some WPT work, has been added to ESPN's streaming team. Next week, Lon McCarron, who is the voice of the World Series of Poker for ESPN, along with Norman Chad. Lon McCarron will return to this show, and we'll talk about all of that coverage coming up. It has been 8 years. Yesterday was the 8th anniversary of Chris Moneymaker winning the main event. People think of him as the first amateur to win it. That's not really true, because a guy named Robert Varconi won it in 2002. But because of Chris's last name, Moneymaker, and the fact that he won it through a $39 online satellite, that is considered the year that started the poker boom. It does not seem like it's only been 8 years. It seems like online poker and people qualifying for the main event and getting in to tournaments all across the country has been going on for a lot longer than that. But yesterday was the 8th anniversary of Moneymaker starting off the boom. When we come back, we'll talk with Kathy Liebert for some thoughts on the online poker crackdown, her weekend in Reno, her thoughts on the upcoming World Series of Poker, and lots more. Kathy, one of the most outspoken people in the world of poker. I'm looking forward to talking to her. Thanks to our newest listeners, downloading our podcast from thechipleader.com and via iTunes worldwide. We had new listeners last week in Malta and Cyprus and Qatar downloading this show. If you're not getting it, go to iTunes, search for the Final Table Poker Radio Show, and get it yourself, or use the link that we have conveniently located for you on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. This weekend, another opportunity for you to come to Harrah's St. Louis and qualify for the main event. Two more double shootout opportunities here at Harrah's St. Louis. I tried four of them this weekend, went 0 for 4, unfortunately. Doesn't look like I'll be playing in the main event this year. But two more chances this weekend at noon and 3 on Saturday afternoon. A $200 buy-in, 50 players in each round. All you got to do is beat your table. The winners of the 10 tables then go to the final table, and the winner of that gets an $11,000 package, which includes a seat in the main event plus $1,000 in spending cash to get you out there and put you up this July. That's not the only tournament action they have here at Harrah's St. Louis. I urge you to go to harrahs.com/STLpoker and take a look at all the tournaments they've got going on. Even if you don't care about going to the series this summer, even if you're just the kind of person who'd like to play a $60 tournament after work some night or in the middle of the day, they've got those and all sorts of different levels of buy-ins that go on here, plus lots of action. Harrah's St. Louis has Pot Limit Omaha more than any other casino in town. In fact, the only casino in town that I know of that spreads PLO on a regular basis. The games go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. On the weekend, they go all night and all into the next day, and there's always great action in that. Plus, lots of no-limit action. There's a 20-40 game that's been going on in St. Louis for over 15 years. Harrah's is the home of that on Wednesdays and Fridays. There's 3-6 limit action and 1-2 and 1-2-5 no limit games. This is the place to come if you want to play poker. Harrah's St. Louis. For information, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. I'll be right back with more of the final table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and those podcasts on iTunes and theshipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I am Paul Harrah, sitting at the feature table of Harrah's St. Louis. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is back into a tournament at the Red Rock Casino. After joining me for the first 10 or 15 minutes of the show, he ran back to try to cash in this thing or maybe even take it down. As we mentioned, he spent the weekend in Reno, Nevada. So did our next guest, Kathy Liebert, owner of one WSOP bracelet, the winningest woman in tournament poker history. I've lost track. I think it's close to 200 caches that Kathy has had in her tournament career. Last time I saw her was when we both happened to be at the Commerce Casino out in Los Angeles a couple of months ago, and I was having lunch with some friends, and Kathy walked in, and I said hi, and she came over and sat down, and we talked for a while, and I said, Kathy, you've got to come on the show. We have so much to talk about. The schedules haven't meshed until today, and so I'm happy, Kathy, that you've been able to make it, and welcome back to the Final Table. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Tell me about your weekend in Reno.
Well, it was fun. We raised a lot of money for the charity, for the animals, NSPCA, and I had a good time. Everyone was very friendly, a lot of locals there, wanting to take pictures, wanting autographs, and everyone seemed just to have a good time.
You and Dennis and Men Win were all at the same table in the Nevada State Championship on Sunday. You were on Dennis's left, you were on Dennis's left, and Men was to your left. Was that the toughest table in the room that day?
I bet it was. I would think it would be. Yeah, there wasn't too many pros there. It was mostly locals.
How'd you do?
I busted out.
But I saw that you tweeted that you went in style both there and back. You flew with Antonio on his private jet?
Well, it wasn't Antonio's private jet, but yeah, I guess the Peppermill provided a jet for us, which is very nice.
That's a very nice way to travel. All right, let's get down to important topics here. You are mostly a live tournament player, but you did play some online, and I'm wondering how you're doing in this post-Black Friday environment.
Well, it upset me for a lot of different reasons. I mean, obviously the fact that some of the sites have not cashed out the players' money is very upsetting. I didn't play a ton online, but I do miss it. But I've been able to adjust pretty easily because I mostly play live tournaments, like you said. But I was hoping to practice my heads-up skills a little bit more online, which I like to do. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to do that since Black Friday.
Do you still have money locked up on any of these sites?
Yeah, I had money on all three of the major sites that got indicted, and I did get my money back on PokerStars like everybody else did, and hopefully I will get it back on the other two sites.
It's been no secret that you and Howard Lederer haven't gotten along for a long, long time. I'm surprised that you would have had any money on Full Tilt considering what you said about him in the past.
Yeah, actually, I really didn't play on Absolute Poker or UB at all for the last couple of years, but I still had some money on there just because I was just too lazy to cash it out. And with Full Tilt, I really didn't play on there very much because I didn't like the management and I had heard some bad things, especially about the bouncing of checks and things. But Alan Kessler had needed to borrow some money, and he actually paid me back on Full Tilt, so I had more on there than I would have liked. I always had a little bit on there, but I really didn't play on there very much, so I actually have more on there than I normally would have.
Most of the big names on Full Tilt haven't really shown their faces recently. Howard and Chris Jesus Ferguson have both withdrawn their names from the board of directors of the Poker Players Alliance. They and Phil Ivey didn't show up at the Bellagio for the WPT Championship. Do you think there's a chance they show up at the World Series of Poker if players haven't been able to cash out by then?
Well, I think there's a chance, but I did make a bet with two different people that Howard Lederer and Chris Ferguson would not be playing. Would not be at the World Series this year, because even if they do get the cash outs, which is hopeful at best at this point, I think they're still at risk of being indicted. You know, there's still indictments coming down. There was a new one just yesterday with Doyle's Room and a bunch of others. So I think that it's, you know, I know they were being investigated, at least in the Financial Times London newspaper, over a year ago. It said that Howard Letterer and Chris Curtis were being investigated. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't show up, just because they still could be at risk of being indicted.
Some of the people who've been writing about this on forums and blogs online have been talking about whether the Full Tilt pros, those who are considered to have been the management, even if they weren't by name listed as the owners of the company at this point, but whether they have any obligation to the players who put all that money onto those sites through the years. What do you think?
Who has obligation?
Yeah, do the Full Tilt pros, the ones who have become enriched by their ownership of this site, or at least their consulting deals with this site, or the fact that they were Full Tilt pros, do they have an obligation? Do you think, for instance, Ivy and Letterer and Ferguson and some of the other big shots who've made millions off of that site should say, you know what, you can't get your money back because the company has a shortage, I'm going to cough up some of my own money to make that happen? Do they have that obligation?
Yes, I think the people that actually own shares in Full Tilt that have made millions off of it should stand by their name and reputation. The fact that, you know, a lot of people signed up because of their name and reputation, they should, if they don't have the money in the actual Full Tilt account, they should come out of pocket, because they did get a lot of the money out of Full Tilt. And, you know, I mean, just because it paid out the money, if now the company's in trouble, I would think that they should stand by their company and the fact that they've made so much and pay back the players that put their money on there. And they should have made plenty with just the rake alone. They don't need the customer's deposits. I mean, that would be inconceivable for me to believe that they could be living the life of luxury while a lot of people are struggling and can't afford to buy in, you know, because they have their money locked up on Full Tilt.
Yeah. Part of the story about that site that troubles me the most is, and we don't know 100% whether this is what's happened, but the story that we keep hearing is that, unlike what PokerStars did with player funds, that Full Tilt may have commingled player funds and company funds, which means that the money that was going to some of these top pros may not have just been coming off of the rake that the site was making, but from every deposit that somebody was putting on that site. Is that the way you understand it?
Yeah, I think it's very likely the funds were commingled. I don't think that it's their gaming license or razor or whatever, I don't think requires them to have it in a separated, segregated account like PokerStars did. So I think that if they had the money in a separated or segregated account, that they would have paid us.
And in the meantime, you do think that there's an obligation on their part to reach into their own pockets and say, you know what, if the company doesn't have the money to pay you out, we're going to put it together and pay you out. I don't know that they would have anywhere close to that, considering that Stars has paid out over $100 million. I don't know that these guys can get $100 million out of their bank accounts to do that, but you feel that they are obligated in that way?
I think anybody that has owned shares in the company and benefited from it and gotten big distributions from the company, is obligated to the customers to pay back those deposits. If they did pay out more than what they had, or more than what they have available in terms of customer deposits, then that money really was customer money, and that belongs to the people that deposited it. So definitely, I don't know that anybody that doesn't have an ownership share is liable, but anybody that got big cash outs and payouts, dividends or whatever you want to call it from Full Tilt, should pay back that money. And I think it's very likely that some of those guys have made tons of money. In fact, if they combined all their money, I would think they would have enough to pay out the customer deposits.
Talking with Kathy Liebert here on the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Paul Harris sitting at the feature table at Harris St. Louis. Since we talked about the problems that you've had with Howard Letterer, let me bring up his sister, Annie Duke, for just a second. Another person who you haven't really gotten along with over the last few years. It was funny because we had Daniel Negreanu on the show last week. He's also had some words to say about Annie. And both you and Daniel are among the pros who met the criteria for Annie's new Federated Poker League. I asked Daniel last week if Annie had called him to tell him that he was one of the qualifiers and whether he would come and play, and he said Annie didn't call him. Jeffrey Pollack made the phone call. Have you heard from Annie or Jeffrey?
I did get a phone call from Annie. I didn't answer the call. She left me a voicemail, and then I saw her at the charity event just the other day. So, yeah, she did get in touch with me and let me know that I was in the league.
Will you play in the league?
Well, I actually did speak to Jeffrey as well, or we tweeted at each other anyway, and I said that if they meet all the promises that they've made regarding all the added money and everything else, that I would play. And he tweeted back that he promised that all the promises would be met. So if that's the case, then I would play. I'm still a little bit concerned because I don't know where all the money is going to come from. You know, they're promising a lot, and I don't know if they're going to be able to meet all those promises, even though he did say they would. I'm hopeful, but I'm still not sure.
Yeah, it is still an open question as to where this money is coming from. And he says that they have a TV deal and that they do have sponsors. They just aren't ready to announce who they are yet. But is your concern just the fact that you want to make sure that they have the money before you sit down and play in one of their events and cough up 20 grand of your own?
Well, I mean, they're promising a free roll at the end and added money and all these things and TV, and I just don't know where it's going to come from, and I guess there's no way I can be sure. I mean, the first event might happen, and we still won't really be sure if they're going to have all the, if everything else is going to be met. But assuming everything they've promised does come into fruition before that first event, yeah, I would play it. You know, I have similar feelings to Daniel, just based on what I've heard about Annie and from what Daniel has told me and everything else. I don't really know Annie very well, but I really didn't appreciate that she put that she's the number one woman player on her website, so I agree with Daniel on that, and I do believe she's taken it that down now. But for many years, she was going around saying she was the number one ranked woman and all this stuff, which is just not true.
Yep. You're famous, Kathy, for not having signed any endorsement deals. I think a lot of that was because sites weren't asking you. In fact, when I saw you at the, I think it was at the Venetian, at the NAPT about a year and a half ago, you were getting into it pretty good verbally with representatives of a couple of sites there, wondering why isn't the winningest woman poker player in tournament poker history signed to any of these sites. Has anybody ever been able to look you in the eye and give you any kind of direct answer to that question?
Well, I have had sponsorship deals, so let me just correct that. I had a long time ago when Poker Stars first came on, I had some short-term deals with them, and then I had a short-term deal with Party Poker, and then I actually voluntarily left Party Poker because I had a better offer from Interpoker, which was a division of CryptoLogic, or a licensee of CryptoLogic. And then when the UIGEA passed in 2006, I lost my sponsorship deal because they left the country, which I think was the right thing to do. And obviously, Full Tilt and PokerStars didn't leave the U.S. market, and now they're being indicted based on a lot of charges and fraud and all that stuff. So I did have a deal before the UIGEA came to fruition. And even after that, PokerStars had offered me some short-term deals and some one-off deals and that kind of thing. I never really wanted to sign with Full Tilt because I didn't like the management. They never offered me a deal. We never really discussed it. I did get an agent at one point that said that he contacted Full Tilt and they said they were not interested, or Ray Bittar wrote an email back saying they were not interested or whatever. But me personally never had any dealings with Full Tilt, never wore a Full Tilt patch, never wore a UB or AP patch. And mostly, I mean, I could have worn it at different times and been compensated for that, but I decided that I didn't want to represent those companies for various reasons, obviously UPAP's reputation and obviously my dislike of the management. I knew that Howard was running Full Tilt, and he had never given me any respect or offer or anything of, I just everything about him kind of turned me off. So I never really did get into negotiations with Full Tilt at all.
Did you feel slighted in the last 5 years while all these other people were getting signed to pretty big money deals that you weren't?
Well, it seemed to me like it was ridiculous how many people had Full Tilt deals. It seemed like everybody that I saw had a Full Tilt patch on. And that kind of did tilt me a little bit, to be honest, because it just seemed like people that had done nothing or people I'd never even recognized were wearing Full Tilt patches and getting big bucks and that kind of thing. And I just didn't seem... It didn't really make sense to me that they, you know, it also didn't seem fair because basically Full Tilt and PokerStars had, well, I mean, I guess UB and AP also, pretty much had a monopoly on the market. And if it had been legal, that wouldn't be the case. if it was legal for everybody to come into the marketplace, there would have been more competition and more opportunities for everybody. So basically the fact that they were willing to engage in whatever activities they'd engaged in to continue to operate in the U.S., you know, gave them a virtual monopoly, which shouldn't have been the case. You know, they shouldn't have been able to make all that money. You know, if they had carriers and all the other companies were allowed to enter that market, it would have been much more fair for everybody.
All right, Kathy, I've got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about making a living as a touring pro without online sponsorship money. I also want to talk to you about the upcoming World Series of Poker, your recent trip to Florida, and lots more. So stand by. Kathy Liebert, the winningest woman in tournament poker history, here on the final table with Paul Harris. My partner, Dennis Phillips, is in the midst of a tournament out at the Red Rock Casino in Las Vegas. We wish him the best of luck there. And I'll be back with more of the final table in a moment from Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and those podcasts on thechipleader.com. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas playing at the Red Rock Casino in a tournament right now. I'm Paul Harris, not playing in a tournament, sitting here hosting the show today solo with my guest Kathy Liebert, the winningest woman in tournament poker history. Kathy is online on Twitter as PokerCat, or are you now PokerCat1?
PokerCat with a K.
Right. I saw you tweeted a couple of weeks ago that you were playing somewhere in some tournament, or maybe it was in a cash game, and somebody bet you that you couldn't keep quiet at the table. You do have a reputation, I know from having played at a table with you, for talking and trying to engage everybody at the table. What was that prop bet?
Actually, I was at the table talking and reading tweets and kind of joking around and having a good time. And then I said, okay, this is the last thing I'm going to say. And somebody said, I doubt that, or I bet against that. I said, okay, I'll make you a bet. And so we wound up betting $500. And then somebody from the other table came over and wanted to bet $500 also. So it was the easiest thousand I ever made.
How long did you have to stay silent?
The bet was for 2 hours, but I actually busted out before the full 2 hours were up. So I came back after 2 hours and collected my money.
Now, what happens, because you are very recognizable in these tournaments, what happens when somebody comes up to you and you bust it out and now they want to talk to you or they want to get your autograph or whatever it is? Would that have counted?
Yeah, actually, one of the guys that bet me from the other table kind of tried to set me up. He sent two women over to get my autograph, and they were saying, oh, can I get your autograph and everything? Well, I managed to sign the autograph without saying a word, and then somebody else came up and wanted to talk to me, and I kind of didn't say anything. I just kind of, you know, gave a little hand signal or something. So I just wanted to make sure that I didn't say anything just because I didn't want to take the risk of losing the bet. But they did try, you know, actually one guy came up to the one that got sent two women. He said, wow, you know, I really thought I was going to get you. You know, I'm going to pay you right now because if you didn't talk to them, you know, after you managed to do the autograph and everything without saying anything, you know, you definitely win. And then I came back a little while later and collected the money from the other guy who he wasn't sure whether, you know, the bet was off when I busted out or not, but I just didn't want to take the chance.
Nice going. Nice going. Let's talk a little bit about the life of a touring pro. You've done this for a lot of years now, and you do travel the country and play in tournaments. Mostly you're playing in Vegas, but you recently went to Florida, and like I said, you were in Reno this weekend, and you've been at various other places around the country. How hard is it to be a touring poker pro?
It's not easy. I mean, a lot of people have trouble with money management. Obviously, it's a very volatile to play at the tournaments. You can have a lot of ups and downs, good years and bad years. And if you don't have good money management, it's very easy to go broke. I know a lot of poker players struggle with maintaining their bankroll, you know, with the ups and downs and, you know, with paying for their bills and everything else. A lot of them do struggle. And I feel like I've been fortunate to not only have success, you know, I've had bad you know, I mean, like everybody, I've had times when I didn't win, and the fact that I was a good money manager and didn't blow all my money when I did win was able to stay in action even through the good times and the bad times.
Do you play the entire spread of buy-ins, or do you stick to small buy-ins, big buy-ins? What do?
I play all the WPT events that I can, and those are $10,000 events for the most part. So I play most of the WPTs. Obviously, I play at the World Series. I will occasionally travel for other big tournaments. I used to play a lot of the small ones, but I've cut back on the small ones just because it's too much. last year at the World Series. I did play a lot of tournaments and burnt myself out. So this year I've kind of told myself, okay, it's fine to play, but, you know, not to overdo it, not to play every event. You know, just kind of stick to my – I think I'm going to try to stick to mostly no limit and pot limit and stick to limit events just because it's too much to try to play everything.
You know, I was going to ask you, that ESPN is having their WSOP fantasy draft today, and I guess what you're saying is don't pick me.
I mean, I feel like I'm competitive. In fact, it might be more competitive to do well, the fact that I'm not trying to play every event. You know, I'm certainly going to play a fair number of events, but I'm not going to try to play everything. I'm going to just kind of pace myself, and if I don't feel up to it or not at my best or feel tired one day, you know, it's okay to skip an event. But I do feel like I'm very competitive, the most competitive in no-limit events, so I'm going to try to stick mostly to that. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that play a lot more events than I do, but, you know, that can be very tiring. You know, if you try to play every event, sometimes that takes more out of you when you're not at your best when you play. So hopefully I'll do well and the strategy will work out.
Will you play even the 1K events, which will have some of the biggest fields?
Yeah, I tend to play most of the no-limit events, which are the big fields. So, yeah, I will play some of the smaller events of the no-limit, and obviously they're huge fields and very tough to get through, whereas a lot of the other names I know will be playing the 5 o'clock tournaments, the bigger buy-ins with smaller fields. So in that sense, they have a better chance of, you know, of getting through the field because they're playing smaller fields. Of course, those fields are tougher, but I think the big buy-ins will be very small fields this year. A lot of the Red Pros won't be able to afford it. They know they've lost their sponsorship deal, and most of them have lost their sponsorship deal with Full Tilt now because you can't. It doesn't run in the U.S. anymore. So I think that the big buy-ins will be especially hurt, and I think the small buy-ins, like the 1K and 1500, will still be huge fields.
We talked with Daniel about this last week because I asked Dennis to give me a pick on how many people he thinks will be in the main event, and he set the over-under at 5,273, and I snap-called the under. I thought that was way high. Then we had Daniel on, and he said 3,284. What's your prediction?
I bet the under 5,000. I already made a bet for under 5,000. I think it might be close to that number, but I took the under.
I think it's entirely possible that we could have more people playing in one of the 1K events on that first weekend, perhaps, than we will end up in the main event, because most of the people who are playing in the 1Ks are unsponsored people, weekend warriors who want to take their shot at a bracelet event, and here's their chance.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are hurting, especially with the money still not being released from two of the major online poker sites, and that will definitely hurt a lot of the numbers at the World Series. But most people can still afford 1,000, and that probably won't be affected that much. So I agree with you that it's very likely that the $1,000 events will be much bigger than the bigger ones.
So I mentioned before that you went down to play a WPT event in Florida, and you seemed to like it down there, and you actually intimated in one of your tweets that you were thinking about maybe getting a place down there because you liked it so much.
Yeah, I thought Florida was really a lot of fun. I liked the environment. I liked the games, you know, the beach there. I mean, so, yeah, I really did enjoy it. And I know there's another team that's coming to play in August that I might go down to. I think it's the Isles that I haven't been to yet. I thought the Hard Rock was a lot of fun, and I really did like the games. The players didn't seem very good to me, and I thought there was some opportunity there. I don't know if I'm going to actually buy a place yet, but it seems like with the real estate market being down, it might be a good opportunity to take a look.
Yeah, the games are pretty great down there. I've made a couple of trips down myself, including for the circuit event in January, and played at the West Palm Beach Kennel Club, and really enjoyed myself down there and thought the same thing. Wow, it's January and it's 75 and I'm enjoying life and still playing poker. It seemed pretty good. When you play cash, what do you play?
It varies. I don't usually play a lot of cash games. I mostly play cash for fun or entertainment. So I played in some of the smaller games. I actually sat in the 1-2, the 2-5, the 5-10, and the 25-50. Oh, no, it was 10 and a quarter, I believe it was, actually. 10-20 or 10 and a quarter. So, you know, I'll play in all different ones. You know, basically, if the game looks good or if it looks fun, I'll sit down. You know, for the 1-2 games, I was just kind of having fun, rolling around a little bit and getting a massage. And for the bigger games, obviously, I take that a little bit more seriously. But, Yeah, I mean, I don't. It doesn't really matter what the game is, if it looks fun or if I want to sit down, I'll play anything.
Why don't you play high stakes, no limit?
You know, I've been playing tournaments for so long, and the money is so big in the tournaments, and I kind of really enjoy the tournaments, that I never really wanted to specialize in the cash games. You know, I've done well in the tournaments, so a lot of times when I have a little bit of free time, I'd rather just kind of take a break and not play that much. So I do enjoy the cash game sometimes, but I just decided to mostly focus on the tournaments, and that takes a lot of time and energy. So when I play cash, it's more for entertainment rather than to make a living at it.
Is that why we haven't seen you on TV shows like High Stakes Poker?
I actually haven't been invited to play most of the TV events.
Now, you see, this is another big slight. Why not?
I guess I'm not PC, or I'm not friends with the right people, or whatever you have to do to get the invites. You know, I'm sure there's a few different reasons, but I think it's basically that I'm not in with the right people, or they don't like me, or whatever. I don't know exactly. I mean, Full Tilt obviously had a lot of power with a lot of those TV shows. You know, they obviously had Poker After Dark; they were sponsoring that, as well as some of the others. So I don't know the exact reason. But, I guess I'm not popular or PC with the right people, basically.
Well, it can't be that you would be too quiet at the table. We've established that.
Yeah, I can be quiet sometimes, but I'm certainly not shy about speaking my mind, which is maybe the problem. You know, sometimes I speak my mind and people don't agree with me or don't like what I have to say. So that could be an issue sometimes with some of these producers.
I think you're fun to have at the table. I really enjoyed playing with you in that event last year, and Dennis has said the same. He played with you not only this weekend in Reno, but you guys were also on Live at the Bike a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I like Dennis. Yeah, he's always fun to talk with, and he gave me some information about seeing a UB financial statement that said they lost $30 million or something last year, but they paid out ridiculous amounts of money to all these individuals. So I thought that was very interesting.
I want to go back to one last question here about the World Series of Poker. I mentioned that ESPN's having its fantasy draft. If you were drafting players who you would choose to take down bracelets this year, who would be amongst the people that you would choose?
Well, obviously Daniel Negreanu was a great player. I would pick him as being one that would probably be at the top of the list. If Phil Ivey shows up, which I think he's a favorite to show up, obviously he's always competitive. Although I know he has a huge bracelet bet, I don't know if he's going to be playing so much that he overdoes it, assuming he does play. Wow, who else? Vanessa Selbst has had an amazing year. I would certainly think that she's very capable of continuing that streak. I guess those are the top ones that come to my mind off the top of my head.
Not Eric Seidel, although he actually tweeted today saying that he's not going to be playing a full schedule. But if the buy-in was 100,000 or more, you know, he just took down this super high roller at the Bellagio last week. It's almost gotten ridiculous when Eric's in the roster, hasn't it?
Well, he's done incredibly well in these short field high roller events, but he hasn't done particularly well in some of the regular buy-in events lately. So yeah, his streak in these high roller events has been absolutely unbelievable. I mean, just really amazing. But in the smaller events, he doesn't seem to do as well. So I think he's a great player, but, yeah, he tweeted he was going to be playing mostly the bigger buy-in mixed games as opposed to just all the no-limit events. So, yeah, I think he's competitive, but he seems to do better in the short-field big buy-in events than he does in the smaller events in general.
Any of these young gun 20-something hotshots impress you?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of them that are really good. Vivek Rajkumar, I think he's a great player. He also came... I think he came third in the super high roller event that Eric won. I think that he's an excellent player. I certainly wouldn't be surprised to see him doing very well. And there's a lot of really good young players. So these internet players, assuming that they don't have their bankrolls all locked up on Full Tilt still, I think are very competitive and have a very good chance to do well. A lot of them have impressed me. I mean, the game really has changed. It's so much more aggressive. And, you know, being a player that played live years ago when if they 3-bet you, they always had queens beat, you know, it's been an adjustment. And hopefully I'll start making a little bit more of an adjustment against the younger players because they're just so aggressive and so creative And a lot of times it's very hard to put them on a hand. They, you know, you three bet them and they four bet you, and then they show you the 9-7 when it comes 7-7-9. You know, kind of you don't expect it.
Yeah.
So,
Do you think that pendulum might swing back the other way if we have a couple of years where people can't play online?
Yeah, I think that a lot of these young players have gotten very good very quickly because they had so much, they got to play so much volume online. And if that's not available to them anymore, I think that the learning curve, it'll take them a lot longer to get better. So a lot of the new players coming in that don't have the online experience will probably not be as good. So, yeah, in the long run, not having internet poker legal in the U.S. will probably make the games easier to beat.
In the long run, we'll have to see how far that pendulum swings back the other way. Kathy, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure whenever I run into you, and I'm glad we could finally make the schedules mesh so that you could join me here today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
That's Kathy Liebert, the winningest woman in tournament poker history, joining me here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. All right, a few other things to get to before we close things out. By the way, as I mentioned, Kathy's on Twitter as PokerCat with a K. You can also follow Dennis as Dennis_Phillips, or you can follow me as Paul Harris Show. One other person you might want to follow if you're in the Las Vegas area is Jungleman12, Daniel Cates, the 21-year-old kid who became an online phenom, winning millions off of some of the best players in the world. He is going to free roll somebody into the main event this year, and he's doing it as kind of a follow me and I'll stake you kind of thing on Twitter. I'm not exactly sure exactly how the details of that work, but it seems to be a no strings attached deal where he'll give you the $10,000 to buy into the main event, and you don't even have to give him a percentage of that. So you can do that. Also, congratulations, as I mentioned, to Eric Seidel, who won the Super High Roller last week at the WPT at the Bellagio, and Scott Seaver, who took down the 25K World Poker Tour Championship. Scott was involved in a little bit of that controversy that we talked about with Daniel last week with Ali T, the alleged cheater from Europe, who was allowed to play in that WPT championship because he had won a Spanish event earlier in the year that qualified him for that. But as we've learned, Ali will not be allowed to play in the World Series of Poker this summer. Also, congratulations to another friend of the show, Maria Ho, who has signed an endorsement deal with the Windstar Casino in Oklahoma. That's the one just over the Texas border that a lot of the players in Dallas like to go to. Greg Raymer has talked about that because he's also a poker ambassador for that Windstar. Good luck to our friend Phil Stelzer, Columbia Phil, as he's known here in the St. Louis area. Phil was the St. Louis Casino Champion during our World Series of Poker circuit event here in April. That qualified him for the $1 million free roll that starts at Caesars Palace this Thursday. 100 guys, well, men and women, from all over the country who have qualified at the circuit events will be there to play for the $1 million first prize. I suggested to Phil that he talk to everybody involved in that, the other 99 players, and try to make it a 100-way split. They each take $10,000. Boom. Now they're in the main event, free-rolling there this summer. But it doesn't seem like that had happened. However, I would not be surprised to see that they end up with a split as they get closer to the final table there, rather than just $1 million prize. The WSOP is going to be having a seminar series this summer. If you're going to be at the Rio, starting on Saturday, June 4th, and going on either Saturday or Friday of every weekend from then right through the main event, they've got pros like Chad Brown and Andy Block and Doyle Brunson and Jungleman Daniel Cates and Vanessa Selbst and Annette Oberstad and Phil Gordon and Phil Hellmuth and some of the others. They'll all be doing these seminars. They'll last about 45 minutes. They'll all be free. You can just walk up and sit down. They do ask you to make a donation, maybe $10, $15, $20, $25. That'll go to Bad Beat on Cancer, which is a terrific charity that Phil Gordon started several years ago, and I know Dennis has been a big, big supporter of. Bad Beat on Cancer also will ask people to wear patches and pledge 1% of their tournament winnings, which is not a big problem for me because I won't be playing any tournaments this year. Speaking of the circuit events, as I was a moment ago, I talked to a WSOP insider in the last week or so who told me that next year they will not be doing the $10,000 regionals. They'll still do the main events, and they will not be upping the price of those from $1,600, which they were this year. But the four regionals that they did for $10,000 will not be returning next year because of poor turnout, frankly. That was even before Black Friday that decision was made. Last week they had one in New Orleans, did not get nearly as many people as they wanted for that. So no 10K regionals next year. All right, next week we talk with Lon McCarron, who is the voice of ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker. Also Chris Krafcik, who is going to fill us in on where things stand for all the legislation across the country to get intrastate poker going on and the chances of getting online poker licensed and regulated throughout the United States. That's next week on The Final Table, brought to you by Harris St. Louis and Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. I'm Paul Harris. Thanks for listening to The Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast via iTunes and on thechipleader.com.